Hi, I'm Jenna Lee, a pediatric occupational therapist.
And I'm Greg, a doctor of educational psychology.
We're husband and wife, parents of four, trying to make evidence-based parenting practices accessible to all.
Thanks for joining us as we learn to navigate the happy human life.
All right, we are here, episode number 9, date number 9 with Greg and Jenny. No. Should I not?
Oh, are we? Are you? This is actually the episode. Okay. Yeah, let's do it. I love it.
Oh man,
I love the enthusiasm. Yeah. All right, just a little taste of Greg.
She was before. Mm. All right, to give context, before you were joking about talk show host voice, and I was trying to.
I didn't know you were going to roll with it.
I did,
but I'm here for it, and I'm excited to see where this episode's going
to
go.
I'm afraid to do it again. But let's get into this topic.
We swear we're a lot more professional in our roles as an educational psychology professor and an OT. I swear it.
No, we're not.
this is the funner side.
Yeah, so we have a fun side, but people aren't here for our banter, Jen. They're here
for tell me how to fix the problems.
We're here for some serious business. This is episode 9, a guide to smooth transitions, navigating change, and routines with ease, or relative ease. We're not going to solve all your damn problems.
We're going to make it easier.
We sure are.
With 3 actionable tips. So today we're going to talk all about establishing predictable routines, communicating and explaining to your kids what's going on, and involving our kids in the decision making.
Yes. So we are going to dive into each of those 3 actionable tips in this episode. So our learning outcome, by the end of this episode, we will all better understand how to guide the whole family through smooth transitions. Every time I say smooth, I'm going to go smooth transitions by learning how to...
I'm going to have to rein him in, you guys.
I'm feeling frisky today. By learning how to navigate change and routines with ease. Jenny, what stats do we have from social?
Yeah, so we asked the question, how well does your child handle transitions between different activities or routines? And we weren't specific to age, so this people responding could have children of all ages. More than 50% of you said that your child struggles with transitions. So this is a hot topic.
Yeah. I mean, again, if you have children, that's probably why you're listening to this podcast. You know the deal. Transitions are really hard. Obviously for our kids, hell, they're hard for me. I mean, I don't ever like when I have to stop and do a thing that I'm doing to move on to another thing. It's very challenging. So this is real for everybody. So let's dig right into our first actionable tip. Establish predictable routines. So jumping right into a story, you know, we've been working at this whole family thing for a while now. And so our morning routine has become pretty predictable and consistent, right? We wake up around 6:40 a.m. The kids and us brush our teeth. We all get dressed all before coming downstairs. Then if it's a school day, this is all school day routine. Mm-hmm. When we come downstairs,
nobody brushes their teeth on the weekend.
Oh, hell no. So on these days, the kids come downstairs and they get the routine now, right? They know that one, they need to get their snacks packed and sometimes with help from us, depending on the kid and their needs. Then number two, they need to get their breakfast ready. Again, sometimes with support from us, we'll pack their backpacks with them. And then Jenny will sit with our 6 and 8 year olds, girls and do their hair.
That's a topic for another day. It's stressful foremost.
It's the hair doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, there's one of our kids in particular, let's just say has a sensitive scalp. So when the brush comes out, the screams of terror arise. But so what's really cool though, is we have Alexa units in kind of the major rooms of the house and we set reminders, and there is a 7:55 a.m. reminder that dings. Here's your reminder, go to the bus, and we all get it now, right? We get up and we head out to the bus. And so the one thing we've kind of locked down is this morning routine. It has its challenges on a given day, given that there's 2 of us and the 4 kids. But overall, I think we've done a good job making a good predictable morning routine.
Right. So like you just said, it's highly predictable. Mm. And that really sets everyone up for success. When we know what to expect and things meet our expectations, right? Things don't meet our expectations every morning. Sometimes somebody's sick or something happens or someone's having a hard day. But when things do meet our expectations, everyone has a smooth morning, and it just really sets the tone for the day.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's kind of the good side of the coin. If we look at the other side at bedtime, that will serve as a pretty healthy contrast here. Although we have put in some effort in kind of developing a more consistent and predictable bedtime routine, we're just going to, full disclosure, it is not as strong or as structured as the morning one. And we have talked about this and reflected on it. And we think it's just that at the end of the day, we're all so damn beat, right? The kids and us are just, we're not all in it. And so...
Well, and we don't have a place to be either, right? Like, we know that at 7:55, that alarm's going to go off and we need to all be ready, or we're piling into the car and we're driving to school.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen at bedtime. So bedtime is a little more flexible, which is nice, but then also... we're not our best.
And so what's kind of funny though, is there is, you might just be totally deaf to it.
Oh no, I do know.
There's an Alexa reminder that goes off every night at 7:30 p.m. Ding.
This is
Here's
true.
Your reminder, head upstairs for bed. But every night at 7:30, it goes off and we're like, yeah, it's just like, I'm too freaking tired to start this crap. So again, we're trying, we've put some things in place. It's just, we have a really hard time executing it because, yeah, we're fried. But we're going to try to make it our goal here to make that bedtime routine a little more consistent, a little more predictable, so it can help that tired versions of us follow through.
So if we look at research, this tells us that kids, and let's be honest, adults too, thrive on this predictability, right? We thrive on routine. These predictable schedules provide a sense of security. They provide stability for all of us. And that's why it becomes so important to discuss this when we're looking at daily routines within meals, sleep, and so on.
Yeah. So with these routines come transitions, right? How can we help to create, let's say, quote unquote, transition rituals that signal upcoming transitions so our kids are just better able to move smoothly from one activity to the next? Let's say, for example, before bedtime, we might think about incorporating a calming routine like reading a book together, right? This kind of transition ritual can act as a cue for the upcoming transition to the bedtime routine.
Right, but transitions are hard.
Yeah.
Especially for our two-year-old. This has me thinking about his transition to school or when he has to change his clothes. How many times has he gone to school with his pajamas under his clothes?
Yeah.
Often, like just yesterday. Because the transition, it's just too much for him.
Yeah.
It also has me thinking about our older kids and how they've come to expect a snack after school, right? Like, they mostly make these snacks for themselves now, thank goodness.
Yeah.
You know, and these... snacks help to ease the transition from the busy school day to a more relaxed evening.
Right. It's that transition ritual from literally the school day ending to kind of the afternoon home life beginning.
Right. And everyone's happier when they're fed.
Yeah. I mean, I am low blood sugar or hypoglycemia. It is a real thing. We all need to take it seriously. And so I'm thinking, though, what about the people who are going to say that this is so hard because their kids aren't flexible, right? That following routines and these rituals just simply won't work for them.
Yeah. So what's interesting is that kids who have routines are typically more flexible and adaptable.
All right. So you're telling me through providing these routines, right, we're actually building the skill of flexibility, right? It's going to help them develop a mindset of not being so rigid.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that this is going to happen overnight. None of these things are these quick fixes that a lot of us want. Mm. But when our kids develop this clear understanding of what's expected of them, there's more confidence, there's increased emotional security, and there's opportunities for independence to grow, just like our kids in the snack example that I gave, right? They didn't start off that way. But they are growing more independent within this routine because we've practiced it over and over and over again.
Yeah. And so, you know, when we have developed these skills, it just means that they and us as well, we're going to have an increased ability to be prepared when met with kind of unexpected or new situations, right? These transitions that, you know, haven't been prepared for.
Right. And we also have to model too, right? We can share our own experiences managing change and things that are unpredictable.
Yeah.
Our kids really benefit so much from seeing these things in action, especially from us, right? Their trusted adults, their siblings, their older siblings. It helps them develop a more positive attitude towards change versus fearing it and having it be something to push back on or attempt to control.
Right. The idea here, change is inevitable, right? Mm-hmm. These transitions, whether we like it or not, you know,
things are going to happen.
Right. So some are predictable and that's great. We can build routines around them. Others we all know all too well, simply come out of nowhere. So we just want to do our best to kind of introduce change gradually when possible, right? No one wants to be blindsided. And by developing these kind of transition skills, it's just going to help make those unexpected ones be much more easily managed.
Right.
All right. So that brings us to our second actionable tip of the episode. This is all about communication. So the tip here, communicate and explain when a transition is on the horizon.
All right, so this story goes back to our two-year-old,
yay,
shocker, and his difficulty with transitions these days, right? He's a typical two, almost three-year-old. This is very developmentally appropriate. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to get changed. He doesn't want to go to bed. He doesn't want to use the toilet. What do all of these things have in common? He has to transition from one activity to another. And probably he's transitioning from something he enjoys doing a lot more than any of the tasks that I just listed off.
I mean, TV's a lot of fun.
Right. So what helps? There's distraction. But honestly, it's communication.
Yeah.
Greg and I, and his sisters too, they're really good about this. We're constantly explaining to him what's going on, what we're doing, why we're doing it. So, you know, when I drop him off at school, for example, I say something like, "Mommy's going to drop you off. You're going to stay for lunch and rest time." And he might go, "Mm-hmm."
Yeah.
"Mommy's going to go to work and I'll be back to pick you up."
All right.
Right? Same thing every time. He knows the routine. He's better able to accept the change that's about to happen to him. He knows I'm going to return. So he even does this during, he has a yoga class that we go to on Mondays. And the first half of the class is with me. And then the second half, I leave for an hour to go do work before I come to pick him up. And he knows exactly what to expect now. We've been doing this since the beginning of the school year. He knows I'll be back. And transitions, honestly, have become pretty easy for him. Does he still ask for me to stay? Of course, right? He's trying. He wants me to stay, which is nice. But I reassure him, stick to the boundary that I've set, and he really doesn't have an issue anymore.
Yeah. I mean, so if we're just kind of taking a bird's eye view of all of this, the unknown and unexpected are very scary. We can ease.
For all of us.
For all of us.
Even as adults with our developed brains.
Yeah.
It's scary.
I mean, so imagine you're sitting there and I don't know, you're watching TV or you're playing a game and like out of the blue, someone picks you up, kind of puts your coat on, puts you into a car seat, straps you in and just starts driving you somewhere, right? Like without really communicating to you what the hell is happening, you'd be like, "What the hell? I'm being abducted." Like it's, you'd be shocked. You'd be scared. Again, unknown and unexpected things are scary. And oftentimes we don't give our kids receptive vocabulary enough credit. We might think to ourselves, "Oh, there's no use communicating this transition. I need to put my..."
Or we don't even think to communicate because, right, we just have a job that we need to get done.
We're just kind of go, go, go. So, before the transition happens. Take at least a minute to sit with your kid and have a conversation about the upcoming transition, right? Communicate what you're going to be doing, why you're going to be doing it. Again, you might think for younger kids that they're not understanding you. I promise you, just because a kid isn't able to produce language, their ability to receive language and understand is much more than you may expect. So have those conversations, communicate, explain, and alleviate those fears, right?
Yeah, I think what's really, so just this morning, our two-year-old was, he was watching a show right before we had to go to school. And, you know, I gave him a two-minute warning that we were going to be leaving, but I didn't set a timer.
Yeah.
And usually I do set a timer. So I came over, I was like, oh, it's time to go to school. And he looks up at me and he says, the timer didn't go off. Wow, he's like really come
transition
to like
rituals.
Know what to expect. And that's amazing. And he actually... So again, this speaks to practicing this skill. He was flexible and he said, okay, it's time to go.
Yeah.
But I'm going to make sure I continue to set that timer because it is helping to build his skills.
Yeah. Whatever cues we can put into place to just make, again, things less unknown, make them more known, make people more prepared and aware.
Right. So I think this is why communication is so, so important. Even from a very early age, right? We want to talk to our kids about upcoming changes well in advance. We want to explain what's going to happen and why so that their nervous systems are better able to stay regulated.
Oh,
like,
I love
this
it.
Is hello, emotional regulation,
yeah.
Developing these skills versus them sort of interpreting our moves as a reason to go into fight or flight.
Yeah.
Which my son could have, that could have happened today, yeah, right? He could have pushed back. He could have had
him.
A tantrum.
Yeah.
He could have displayed, you know, these behaviors that people like to call them that don't align with what we're trying to accomplish together, right? So children who are able to manage their emotions adapt better to change.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to teach.
And, you know, of course, we want to be using age-appropriate language and, you know, provide information that's relevant to their understanding, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for us, we've got kids ranging from 11 to 2. We would speak to each of them very differently about the same exact transition. So we want to provide that right level of support, right?
Even independent of their age, they all have different needs
exactly.
as well. So you're taking into consideration their age, but also, you know, what kind of support is going to best help that particular child.
Yeah. And so like, in short, creating these open lines for communication is helping us be proactive in reassuring them that you're there to support them through whatever changes lay ahead.
Yeah, and I love this because we're actually treating our kids as human.
Who would have thought that was something we should be doing?
We're not these adults that are here to impose our ways on them simply because we have more power.
Some of us are.
We're trying not to be those people. Right. We're here. We want to foster this open, trusting relationships. And really, we believe that this is going to have so many positive benefits that go beyond smooth transitions. Right.
Yeah.
These connections are going to build an open line of communication between you and your kids. And it's going to help them feel more comfortable discussing things like their feelings and other maybe more difficult topics, for example, with you in the future.
Yeah. And so again, our oldest is going to be turning 12 this coming summer.
Oh my God. I just can't believe that.
The teen years are right around the corner. And I am just so appreciative and grateful for the fact that we have this open line of communication because things are about to get really tough. And I'm very confident that we are still going to be an open book with her and her with us and for all of other kids. So again, if anything, recognize that acknowledging and validating your children's feelings about whatever really, but obviously we're here talking about
transitions.
Should
I validate her when she calls me cringe?
Yes, you should, because you're probably being a bit cringe. Let's be real. We just have to let them know. It's okay to feel all the emotions that they're feeling about the transition, right? Be empathetic, show understanding. Like, even if these changes, these transitions may seem minor to you, let's face it, they may not be so minor to them. And being empathetic, recognizing that, and validating them for what they're feeling is only going to help move things in the direction that we want versus the version of us that gets pissed off and maybe takes a different approach.
Yeah. So I think this really leads us nicely into actionable tip number 3, which is involving our kids in the decision making.
Yes. So this is one of my favorite topics of late. It's very collaborative. It's one of my key words of the person I'm trying to be in this world is a collaborative individual. I have control.
He tells us a lot.
I say this a lot, but I need to be more aware and mindful of it because, you know, it's probably based on my own anxiety, but I tend to assert control over anything and everything to alleviate my own anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I want to let go of that control and be more collaborative. And I think starting with, obviously, you and the kids is what's needed most right now. And so we're here talking about the kids, though. The partners episode was the last one. So co-creation is a word that I'm kind of falling back on the most, right? We need to give them the space to kind of, on their own, dictate what's going to happen, how things are going to move forward, right? This goes right back to the previous tip of open communication. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and just jump into another story, and we'll talk about our two-year-old again. The transitions tend to be, at least for us, more challenging with the younger ones. So, I mean, I don't know, what the hell are we going to do when he grows up and isn't a toddler anymore?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to run out of material, no. Right? Like, it'll just be different material.
Yeah. The teens?
It's
going to be a teen podcast as we
What age. Do people say? Bigger kids, bigger problems?
Yeah, that's right. So
more money, more problems. Yeah.
So our two-year-old did start a new school. And, you know, of course, we have to get dressed for school. And
what?
And so what's funny, though, you
can't go in our underwear.
You could see him asserting some kind of control. He had his contingencies. It was like, Dad, I want you to put on my pants. But Mom, you're going to put on my shirt. And then when that's all done, I'm going to need you, Dad, to cut out my tags.
This is my little sensory boy.
Yeah, for sure. And so...
Can we just marvel at, like, all that planning, though?
Yeah, right.
It's a lot.
It's impressive. But so he's working through this. He's trying to weigh into the decision-making with this transition. And we were there for it, right? What he's trying to do admits, with this transition... He's trying to establish a sense of control at a time when things may very well have felt out of his control. Mm-hmm. New school, new teachers, new friends, new routines, new rules.
Everything is new.
And so him kind of asserting his control, yes, buddy, do that. Let's co-create this transition routine together.
Right. We just might need to be more flexible.
Yeah.
Versus asserting more control, which then he will push back and try to assert more control. Like
things will spiral.
It's vicious. Yeah.
It is. And so in this story, we were able to stay regulated, let go of control, go with the flow, right? And we were just doing our best to be proactive, you know, feeling out what he needed and what we were able to do to kind of tap into his need for autonomy and independence. And, you know, just a really, I'll keep it super short, lesson on, you know, development for anyone that's taken a psychology class, this might ring a bell. Erikson's psychosocial model of development has us going through these crises over the lifespan. It's 8 different stages. And our toddlers are going to be in the second stage of seeking this autonomy, this sense of being able to, again, assert control, make decisions, be independent. And so when our kids are demonstrating that autonomy, and oftentimes it starts with the word no. And so for all of you that have the young toddler who is saying no to everything, yes, this is developmentally appropriate. It's what they should be doing. And so sometimes, you know, we can't give them that control. But whenever we can, it's going to help them kind of fulfill this need that they have and alleviate whatever anxiety there is about the transition that's ahead of you.
Right. And what research is showing us is that, or has showed us, involving kids in decision-making processes can really empower them and actually make transitions smoother. So for his age, 2 to 3, for example, you might provide choice to them. Yeah. That allows them to feel that sense of control, but the outcome is going to be the same. So we're still going to be able to move towards whatever that goal is, right? Yeah. And don't expect things to change overnight. This is a process. We want things to be developmentally appropriate. So we're not expecting of our 2-year-old what we might expect of our 6 or 8-year-olds or so on. And just remembering that when possible, we want to include them in discussions about changes and consider their input, whatever that might be.
Yeah, let them co-create as best you can. Let them speak. Let them be heard. Let them make choices.
Right. Actually listen.
Yeah, right. No. It's one thing to listen and then dismiss. You need to really actively listen and then validate and where you can.
And thank them for their contributions.
Right. You want to reinforce that they're trying to kind of weigh in and be a part of the decision-making process. And again, we've all been there.
No judgment.
Right.
We've shot our kids down too, but we're trying hard not to.
But so we all know, because this happens to us too, the moment someone is kind of dictating to you exactly how things are going to go, you feel this kind of control being stripped away from you, and you lose a lot of your motivation to participate as the anxiety kind of can settle in. So the whole point is we want to help them feel more in control. And when they are, when they do kind of share, like, again, sure, I'll put on your shirt and mom will put on your pants, buddy, he becomes invested in the whole transition process. He helped create it. So there's more buy-in coming from him, right? So at the end of the day, we are going to allow our kids to express their opinions and preferences, which, again, may not be convenient for us in the moment, but if we can go with the flow, be more flexible. My daughters, literally this morning out to the bus, were wearing wigs. They got wigs from my, I don't know if you saw them at the thing.
Oh, no.
Sorry, they took them off before the bus came. God. My whole thing was they're going to get on the bus with these wigs.
Yeah.
As soon as the bus comes, they rip them off, they're heading through them to me. But I was ready. I'm like, all right, you want to wear wigs on the bus, kid? If that's going to help this transition, let's do it. Again, me being flexible and letting them move forward with that decision, it's just going to pay off in the future as they kind of develop the skills to manage these transitions by having a say in how the transitions go.
Right. Well, we want our kids, as they grow up, to have opinions and preferences and to share that with people and not feel shame or guilt for doing so.
Hell yeah.
Or that their thoughts and opinions are going to be turned down.
Right. So co-creation, label it, stamp it, live it. That brings us to the conclusion of this episode. Let's summarize those 3 tips for you to keep them top of mind. Number 1 was all about establishing predictable routines. Number 2 is having that open line of communication and explanation about the transition ahead. And 3, we just got finished talking about how we're going to try to involve our kids in the decision-making process. Be collaborative. Let them co-create with you.
Yeah, and to wrap things up, let's just talk about some of the elephants in the room.
Oh.
Some of you might be thinking some things, and that's okay. We need to prepare for challenges, right? We need to anticipate that there are going to be potential challenges and be prepared to discuss strategies for coping with them together. Mm. Remembering all along that we are on their team and we want to make decisions with them.
With them. Facing challenges is a normal part of life, right? But we have to remember, problem solving and working through those challenges is like the most valuable skill. So while you're doing all of this hard work, we just want to make sure that you celebrate the small victories and achievements during any given transition period, right? We all like a little positivity. And so you can say something like to your kid, "Oh, I noticed how you got yourself out of bed and dressed this morning." Or, "Oh, I noticed how you turned off the TV when I said it was time to help with dinner," right? These types of statements can boost confidence and just kind of help them adjust. And we never really need to say like, "Oh, good job." Instead, we need to draw attention and use a bit of positive reinforcement when they successfully manage a transition by noting what specifically they did, right? We want to give attention to what act we want to see more of.
Yeah, so let's remember too that every child is unique, right? So you might need to adjust your approach based on your kids' unique personalities and needs. Ultimately, you're the one who knows your child best, your kids best, And you're really going to foster emotional well-being for the entire family. And you're going to save your sanity, right? That's like what we're all trying to do. That's the most important part.
We want to show up regulated,
have a sane parent.
Yeah.
While you're helping your kids be able to navigate transitions more smoothly.
Yeah. And so, you know, going off the whole, you know, maintaining your sanity, good time for us to plug our regulated parenting workshop, where if you haven't heard about it yet, we've broken it down into, you know, 5 modules. It's over 100 minutes of educational content and these personalized activities that will help you show up as that regulated parent that you want to be.
Thanks, Greg.
You're welcome. I hate being a salesman, by the way, but hey, we love...
Definitely not what we signed up for when we went into the professions that we're in.
God, no. No. So just to give a quick kind of inside scoop, Jenny and I care about what we're doing here, I think more than anything. We want to be the best parents that we can be, and that's where all of this started. And now that like we're kind of like taking others on that journey with us, we're realizing like we can be doing so much more than just working on ourselves. We could work on ourselves and help others work on themselves too. It's been great having this podcast, our email list, obviously the stories we're sharing on social, but this membership community is something that like I think we're really, really proud of. And it's kind of forcing us to dig deeper into our own work as we're kind of going through our own workshops. And I don't know.
Investing a lot of time and energy.
The biggest piece of all of this, the more time we spend thinking about these ideas and being a part of communities that share these ideals, the more we're going to grow in that way. And man, wouldn't it be an awesome world if we had just a worldwide community of parents all working together to be better?
That would be amazing.
Hell yeah.
So we hope to see you there.
Yeah.
Let's wrap things up with a motivational mantra. So let's take a deep breath in. Blow it all out. Relax your jaw, neck, and shoulders. My kids and I will embrace change as a natural part of life. We will welcome growth and new opportunities with open hearts. And by opening our hearts, we will better navigate life's changes with resilience and enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Thanks for spending time with us.
Yeah, we hope to see you in social, in our membership, as a part of one of our workshops. So if you do have any questions, comments, or even suggestions for future podcast episodes, we'd love to hear from you. Go to happyhumanlife.org, connect with us, and we'll be seeing you soon.
See you soon. Take care.